everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, the bite-sized edition. This is our first episode, and just to give you an idea of what this will be about is that this sort of episode is going to step away from our usual recaps that we do. We're right near the end of the first season right now, but we wanted to do something a little bit different with a sort of mini episode to give you something a little bit sooner than our every 2 weeks for the recap episode. So we came up with this bite-sized edition idea, and basically we're going to discuss different aspects of the fandom and kind of break it down and do a little mini episode and just sort of something different than what we usually do. This could cover a whole bunch of different things. For example, this one's going to be about the book On Fire, but we're also going to discuss fan fiction, the webisodes, shipping, the movie, the original movie from the 80s. We can do character discussions, anything you guys want us to discuss more in depth away from the recaps. Drop us a line, let us know what you want us to talk about, and we can do a bite-sized edition on it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is going to be fun, I hope. And if you do have any ideas for that, as Karen said, we have it down as a really solid plan to do this one, which is the tie-in novel, the Teen Wolf movie, the webisode series that was put up on AT&T, and definitely one about fan fiction and shipping, whether they're the same episode or two separate episodes about ships, and then one about like tropes and headcanon and things like that. If you've got anything besides that that you know you'd like us to see, you can always contact us as usual on natwpodcast at Twitter or natwpodcast at gmail.com or notanotherteenwolfpodcast on Tumblr. And yeah, just hit us up like you always do and say, do a bite-sized on this, and we shall attempt to put something together. But yeah, the first one is the Teen Wolf tie-in novel published by MTV's publishing company. It's called On Fire. It's by Nancy Holder, and it is set directly after episode 105, so after the parent-teacher conference. It was published this past summer, so June or July 2012. To give you a little bit of an idea of what the book is about, in case you haven't read it, it follows two paths that sort of meet in the middle. The first one is that Scott starts having some more nightmares from the Alpha and gets called out into the woods sleepwalking, and he has visions of the fire, because we all know who the Alpha is and what his involvement was in the Hale House fire. And the other main part of the plot is that Jackson gets kidnapped. Basically, he gets called out by someone claiming to have information about his birth parents, meets with them, and it's actually a kidnapping ploy by a group of robbers who are planning to rob his family home while his parents are away. So it's all a big con. Allison, Lydia, Stiles, and Scott realize Jackson has gone missing. They try to track him down, and it all turns into something where they're looking for him. He sort of figures out what's going on. Lydia gets stuck at his house with the robbers and threatened there. And Scott and Allison are trying to trace Jackson in the reserve, the Beacon Hills Preserve. At the very end, Stiles and Derek come to track down Scott and Allison, and Derek and Scott end up getting trapped in a fire that the Alpha had been setting in order to both trap Scott and to cover up Scott's locations from Derek. So the other main aspect of the book besides that is when Derek is dealing with the fire, there's quite a few flashbacks of his about Kate and about how he met her and how she started a relationship with him and how she sort of got the information off him in order to start the Hale House fire, and that, you know, he found out that she did it, and then that sort of tells the whole story of their relationship when he was 16. In the end, Jackson escapes the kidnappers, even though one of the girls in the gang had tried to help him get out. She ends up dying, he escapes. Lydia escapes the robbers at his house by help of Danny. Scott and Derek escape the fire, and all is well. It's actually not really a supernatural story at all, unlike most episodes of Teen Wolf, where they're actually dealing with a supernatural issue, you know, like the Alpha or the Canima or something like that. The plot, especially Jackson's plot, is a completely humanistic plotline. It just happens to involve some people that are werewolves. So that's quite an interesting aspect. But besides from that, what were your overall thoughts on the book, Karen?
I was actually a little disappointed by it, I think. I didn't really go into it expecting a lot, but it wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. And I think part of the reason was what you just brought up, that it wasn't really a supernatural plotline. It was actually, you know, basically about Jackson getting kidnapped, and that was the main sort of conflict in the book. But to me, at least, I don't know, it's probably because, like, all I do all day is edit for Hypable and edit other stuff on my own, and so, like, more and more I get a little bit more picky about the sort of things that I see in books. And I just thought that, you know, it wasn't spectacular. I thought the writing was a little weak, and, you know, there were some mistakes and stuff, and the plot line wasn't that strong. It was a little ridiculous, and I didn't hate the book. I didn't even really dislike the book, but I think it read a lot like an average piece of fan fiction, and I think that it could have been a lot stronger and a lot more interesting than it was. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There were definitely aspects of it that I thought were well done, but in general, I've definitely read better fan fiction, and that's honestly not saying fan fiction has a lower standard. Some of the best writing I've ever read in my life has been in fan fiction. Like, some of the best character work and quality has been in fan fiction. And this was a bit more simplistic than a lot of fan fiction that I've read and enjoyed. It was a slightly more childish tone, depending on whose perspective it was written from. And it kind of reminds me of when you get a film and then they release a tie-in novel for it, but when it wasn't a novel and then a film, when it was a film and then they release a book of the film, which is most common with children's films, I guess, like Aladdin, or, you know, a kid's movie where they're like, here's the Toy Story book, if you know what I mean. It was obviously not as childish as that, but it kind of reminded me of that style of writing where it's really, it's not that clever. But a couple of aspects of it that I really liked: most of the character voices were average. Styles, she had a pretty good hold on. And I quite liked all of the stuff involving Danny, because pretty much everything Danny does makes me happy. As far as dialogue goes, some of the Styles dialogue, I think, was up to par with the writing of the show. But in general, it wasn't the greatest, and I've read both better fan fiction and better tie-in novels. Like, I've got tie-in novels for quite a few shows that I watch. Not every single one ever released by every show, but I've got a lot of the Torchwood tie-in novels. Some of those are so good, like as standalone books. They're really, really good quality. And this woman, Nancy Holder, has written for different tie-in novels before, as well as her own series, but she's written Buffy tie-in novels, all sorts. It could be that Teen Wolf hasn't been running that long, and even the second season hadn't come out when she wrote it, so she didn't have that much to go off. She didn't know the characters that well, potentially.
Have you read any of her other novels that she's written?
I feel like one of the couple of Buffy novels I own is one of hers. I don't know, but I feel like it is, and I feel like it wasn't bad either. But again, I think the plot of it was something that didn't make that much sense to me. Like, I feel like there are a lot of plots that you could do that would be a plausible, like, you know, a different monster of the week kind of episode that just doesn't happen to, you know, that happens off screen, like something that happened, another part of their daily run-of-the-mill life that happens, you know, in the Buffy verse, that's very plausible, in the Torchwood verse, that's very plausible, Doctor Who, that's very plausible, and that really works. With this, I feel like that a big event like this would have been mentioned sometime in the show, if you know what I mean, and I probably wouldn't have done such a dramatic plot that didn't actively tie in to anything happening in the show.
Yeah, and I'm not opposed to reading more from her at all. I mean, you know, I'd really like to pick up a Buffy book that she's written and see how that is. I don't think that this necessarily, you know, means that she's a bad writer or anything like that. And I mean, like I said before, it wasn't a bad book. I didn't dislike it. I think I was just hoping for a little bit more out of it. But yeah, I'd like to pick up something else from her and see how that is.
Yeah. See, she's contributed to, I've just had a look on her website, she's contributed to some of my favorite Buffy stuff, which is the Tales of the Slayer books, which are the short stories telling, like, the life of all these different past Slayers. And yes, one of the standalone novels that she's written, Blood and Fog, is one of the Buffy books that I have. I was pretty sure it was. But yeah, I would love this to be good. Like, I would love to get more releases, Teen Wolf releases, that I really liked, and I really was like, oh yeah, these are my characters. I mean, obviously that's why a lot of people read fan fiction, and maybe the fans sort of spend more time or are more emotionally attached sort of to analysing the characters in order for that kind of writing to resonate better. And this is slightly, just doesn't quite feel like the show or quite feel like the characters in certain ways. As far as the canon aspect goes, because this is the big thing for me about whether this book is canon in the context of the show, because this event happening to Jackson and the event of Derek and Scott sort of bonding or struggling through this fire together at the end, you'd think that both of those things would be reflecting in the show at some point, and that if you were going to write something that could be tied into the canon and considered part of the canon, that you would do something that was a bit more seamless. So in regards to the canon, there are a few aspects. They mention the rituals of Wolf Moon, of the gathering of the werewolf families to sort of have reunions and challenges. And this is also mentioned in the Search for a Cure webisodes, which were released, and that same concept. And so people are like, oh, those are definitely canon. Jeff wrote those. And so this is, you know, it's mentioned here. It could be canon, but the webisodes did come first. The webisodes were released in summer 2011. This was released in summer 2012. So it could be that she took from that.
Yeah, and we do know that Jeff was consulted on the book, and, you know, the whole story, I guess, was that an editor approached her initially to ask her if she wanted to write the book, probably because they had known she'd written about Buffy and other, you know, similar shows, and she agreed to do it, and she sat down, she watched the series, and definitely, I remember her saying in an interview that she watched up until the fifth episode several times to make sure that she knew what the viewers would know at that point. So we know she did her research and everything, and Jeff was in on it at least a little bit. And they talked about, you know, he had an A plot in mind and she did the B plot. And essentially she wrote the book and, you know, she had control over that. But Jeff was at least sort of in on the project, at least initially. So my thought is that it's canon right now, because everything that's in the book makes sense in the Teen Wolf world for what we've seen so far. However, I wouldn't put it past them to change it if they needed to, like in season three, if they decided, oh, well, that's not exactly what went down when Derek was younger. This is really what happened.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, maybe they have to change it for logistical reasons, like, you know, or something like that. So my take is right now it's canon because nothing proves it otherwise, but, and, you know, that might happen in the future, so who knows?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not as if it's an unauthorized publication. It's not like unauthorized biography of Tyler Hoechlin, you know, this is not associated with Teen Wolf. If MTV published it, you know, it is a thing. I think that most of it, the Jackson plot, like, all of that, the fire, even the fire plot, even though it doesn't really seem to tie into season one, we don't see any repercussions of that, no problem being canon. Lots of tie-in books have that, as I've said, like Torchwood, Buffy, where it's another story in their verse, you know, where things that happen in their life off screen, that's very common. The Derek backstory stuff, I don't think should have been concreted unless it is 100% canon, because it was too specific. And as an authorized publication, if they double back on it now, it's going to, I mean, people will deal with it. Not everyone's read the book and things like that, but it really,
yeah.
I do not think that that should have been published if the backstory is not Jeff's canon backstory and the plot that he's planning to use, because I think that it will make it look really shoddy if it's not. So that would be the only aspect I'd be like, if that's not canon, I think that you've made a mistake in letting it be released.
Yeah, although that does sort of make me wonder, you know, season three, we're supposed to get some more on Derek's backstory and have a flashback episode and everything. Are they just going to basically
do the same thing that was in the... Yeah,
which wouldn't be a problem because, like you said, not everybody's read the book. But at the same time, I think for the people who have read the book, like, it would almost be repetitive.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how they're going to handle that. But I mean, it is... Everything implied in regards to Kate and Derek's backstory and relationship, it's all very much implied in the show that this is the situation, you know, even if we don't know the specifics, we know that she's older than him, you know, she, you know, makes references to him filling out and all of that. So I really don't know whether it's going to be something that they really stick to, or if they change a bit, or if we don't see the flashback of that and we see the flashback of something else. If we want to talk about the specifics of the book, though, as well, we see Laura as a character in this book. We see his relationship with Kate in this book, and we hear a bit about the fire getting started. So what we learn in the book is that Derek is 16, and it was 6 years prior to the first season, which is the age gap most people have kind of come to make canon for Derek. That's most people's opinion of Derek, is that he was 16 to 17 when the fire happened, and that 6 years on from that, he's now 22 or whatever. His relationship with Laura is, again, something that I don't know if it came from this book or if it was just people's kind of vibe from the show. Because sometimes vibes happen. That sounds really stupid. Sometimes vibes happen. But I seem to remember something about the first time I read Harry Potter, that when it was revealed that James and Lily didn't get along, that Lily didn't like James when they were in school, and that it was all a bit of a drama, and that she thought he was a pretentious douchebag or whatever. I remember reading that and not being shocked. I remember reading that and that already being my headcanon for some reason, like a popular theory in fandom, and I don't remember why. I don't remember if it was that J.K. Rowling gave a hint at it, about it at some point, but I remember reading it and not being like, oh my god, you mean they weren't like high school sweethearts the whole way through? And a lot of people's headcanon about Laura and Derek, and I don't know if it's from this book or I don't know if it's from something else, is that, yeah, that he was obviously very self-contained, very, you know, socially awkward, and that she was very outgoing and popular and kind of like looked after him, but was also much more blended in with normal society. And again, I don't know if that's because of this book, but that's definitely the way that she's portrayed in this. Is that kind of what you thought about her, or did you have any
actually
Laura thoughts?
No, I was actually the complete opposite. But I mean, I haven't read hardly any fan fiction, and this book, I mean, I literally just read it like last week, and obviously I've been keeping up with the show and everything, so really I'm sort of an outsider on all this because I've only strictly seen the show and I'm just now getting into this other material. And my assumption was, at least with Derek's relationship with his sister, was that I always kind of thought it was sort of strained. And I think the reason why I thought that is because she was in Beacon Hills as the Alpha, and he was obviously like elsewhere, because when she died, you know, it was to bring him back and to lure him in for, you know, whatever reason. So in the book, when I found out that they were actually quite close, I really enjoyed that, because I liked seeing them close like that rather than sort of competing with each other or being, you know, not having a good bond or something like that. As far as Derek being socially awkward, I kind of figured that anyway, just because that's sort of his, you know, I mean, that's his personality. I was a little surprised that his sister was so popular, although, and this is just from the book, obviously, but it makes sense to me. Her personality in the book would give you that idea and everything. And it was kind of nice to see that he wasn't and she was popular, and then just how that whole dynamic went. But yeah, I mean, overall, I was actually a little surprised given what I knew from the show.
Yeah, no, I always assumed when I watched the show, and I don't know if this is said or if this, again, has just been picked up from people's theorizing and now I just think it. I always thought that they, after the fire, that they kind of were always together right up until recently, in that she came back to Beacon Hills, like, for a reason. She was like, okay, you stay here, you stay in New York or wherever you were. I'm going back to check on this weird thing that's going on, which was the deer luring her back in with, like, the
right.
When someone left the, you know, the deer there with the spiral. And yeah, so she comes back to check out what is going on in their hometown, leaves baby brother in New York or wherever they were, being, you know, people who wear the leather jackets together. She dies and he comes after her. I always thought that they were together their whole life, pretty much. Again, I'm sure that we're going to get flashbacks. I don't think it's specified, but yeah, that had been my impression from the show. So I really like her, and that way that she's portrayed as sort of very vivacious is, and kind of, you know, coaxing and teasing him, and when he's kind of the little, you know, grumpy cat, is very much the trope in most fandom, the way that they see Laura.
Yeah, and I really enjoy it. It was something that surprised me a little bit, but then once I was like, oh, okay, this is how they are. That was actually one of my favorite parts of the book, was just their relationship, and especially like the diner scene where she's sort of picking on him and they share the burger, and it's like, you know, these guys are really close, and it's just, you got that family vibe off of it, and I really liked it.
Yeah, no, so did I. the Hale family in general, one aspect that I didn't like as much was, I think it's just Derek's mindset as well, because Laura doesn't seem to have it as much, but they really seem to have more of a hang-up about mixing with humans than I had expected, or that I had vibed either from the show or yeah. anything else. Like, they really seem to have this werewolf-human divide, more so than I'd say has been made canon, especially since there were humans in the Hale family. You know, they seem to have this real kind of superiority complex, or, like, live quite animalistically or whatever. Maybe it's only for this special occasion and this is the time when they sort of give in to that. But because Derek does mention having no human friends, but he also mentions, like, wanting to get a part-time job and stuff, so it's not like he's a professional werewolf. But, yeah, it seems slightly more sort of focused on, you know, the werewolf community being about that than I thought had been made canon in the show. My impression was that they were people who happened to be werewolves who just sort of lived their lives as best as they could, and, you know, maybe they weren't, you know, running around in the woods every now and then. They didn't, you know, oppress themselves, but that they were very much normal people who happened to be werewolves, and this seemed to have a bit of a vibe that there was more of a divide, that they gave themselves more of a divide. Again, it might have been only because they were planning this special wolf moon celebration where this stuff happened, but a lot of Derek's mindset seemed really focused on being a werewolf, not just being a person.
Yeah, that's how I felt too, and it's funny because, I mean, like you said, in the TV show, they have to be cautious, obviously, so they don't necessarily, they can't just tell any human that they're a werewolf, because that would go badly.
Yeah.
But in the book, it came off more as like a prejudice, almost like how the hunters feel about the werewolves. This is how the werewolves feel about all humans. And I didn't necessarily like that either, because I thought it was, you know, just a little too much. But it does sort of make sense, I think, because they can't tell anybody and, you know, they'd be ostracized if they did. And I can see where they would get that superiority complex. Because, I mean, they're werewolves, you know, I mean, come on. But, yeah, I was a little surprised by it, too.
Yeah, and just, like, the focus on, like, oh, this is what we do as werewolves. This is how we, whether it's the pack dynamics or, you know, who they can go out with. And, you know, Laura saying, you know, when Derek starts sleeping with Kate and Laura finds out about it, you know, they're kind of on the phone and she's like, you're going to hook up with a human? And he's like, what, you have? And she's like, not all the way or whatever. Like, she wouldn't consider, like, sleeping with, you know, a human. And it kind of reminds me of, like, yeah, like a racial prejudice, like a family thing, you know, like, oh, whatever, you know, you go to school with people, but don't you dare think about marrying someone that isn't Jewish, kind of thing, you know, like, and I didn't really get the impression that they had that, except for obviously that it is a huge secret to protect. So I'm not sure, obviously, what their family was like, but from what Derek said to Scott about how unfair it was for the fire to have happened and all of that kind of thing, when he gave him that speech, he really gave me the impression that they were a normal family of people who happened to be werewolves and hid that fact, that they were normal in society.
Mm-hmm.
What about Scott in this book?
I was pretty intrigued by his backstory more than, you know, the current things. I think the author captured him pretty well with this sort of, you know, derpy side and everything.
The stuff from Scott's point of view was, I mean, I'm not saying it was, like, great to read, but it was pretty realistic to his brain,
yeah.
Like, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And every thought was about Allison.
Yeah.
And so it was, and he had a couple of funny lines in there, too, and I enjoyed, you know, his character as far as it matching up most closely, I think, with the TV counterpart. But like I said, I really enjoyed seeing him as a kid. Not enjoyed, because obviously it was really sad, but it was interesting to me just to kind of get a glimpse at his father, and I'm really intrigued now by that whole storyline, and it just makes me wonder if was his father abusive, and if he was, you know, is that why his mom left him, or, you know, just sort of like, what was the jump between this backstory when he was a little kid at the restaurant needing his inhaler and to where we are now, where she says to the one teacher, we're better off without him. And I just didn't know if there was an incident, you know, that was like the final straw, or if it was just, you know, one day she was like, I can't do this anymore, and she just left him.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an interesting thing to see come into the show if he had to deal with his father, and his father was abusive in some way, though we have already had the abusive father plotline with Isaac and his father. But, you know, obviously Scott's parents didn't get along, and it, again, it was a pretty bold call for them to have made in the book, for them to have painted that relationship like that in case this is considered canon or in case Jeff wanted to do something different. But yeah, I did like that, and I liked the flashback of Derek seeing Stiles as well.
Yeah.
Coming with his parents, coming out of the hospital.
I was really surprised to see both of them in there as they were kids, and I was like, oh, that's weird that he sort of not met them, but, you know, saw them, and now he's got this connection to them once he's grown up, like, 6 years later. And I just thought that was kind of funny that their paths have crossed multiple times. But I was, yeah, I definitely agree that it was a little surprising that she would throw in this information that I would think is, you know, fairly significant. So it does make me wonder, you know, does that mean that this is true, that this is canon?
Because I can happily read things like that in a fan fiction any day, but I know that it's not the show, and this book is kind of leaving me a bit like, I'm not sure if I'm meant to believe it or not. Like, and I can happily read it and not believe it, or I can happily read it and believe it, but I'm really uncertain about that. And
yeah,
I don't know. The Stiles and Scott thing as kids is very much something that, again, I've seen in fan fiction. I've seen, you know, stuff about Derek's backstory or Derek remembering that he's seen or smelled this person before. You know, when Scott and Stiles first meet Derek, Stiles knows who he is. And I don't know if it's because he, you know, stalks the police reports or if it's because he generally remembers him from the town, but he definitely was like, you know, that's Derek Hale. Like, he knew who he was, so Derek could have also either known who they were or, you know, have had some kind of visceral memory of, if they do that much via scent, he may have remembered them in some way or crossed paths even after this at some point.
And speaking of Stiles' backstory, let's kind of get into that a little bit too, because I was really surprised that, I mean, this was basically, we find out that Stiles' mom had cancer in here, and this is where a lot of that concept in the fan fiction stuff comes from, I'm assuming. Mm. And so, like I said before, I mean, I haven't read a whole lot of fan fiction. I know of some stuff and everything, and I was surprised to find out that this is where that came from. And so now it makes me wonder, okay, you know, again, is this canon? Is this true?
Yeah.
But it was another significant thing that I was really surprised to see in here.
I mean, from the show, we definitely have heard him or his father reference, you know, long times in hospital and stuff like that, but we obviously don't know the specifics. This did paint the picture pretty clearly again, so I don't know if we're going to go more into that, you know, in the future, but it is very sad either way.
Yeah, it is.
So if we're going to talk about the sort of Derek and Kate as well, seeing as the backstory was probably the most interesting part of the book. Yeah, so what did you think about the Derek and Kate relationship once it was all spelled out? Like the, you know, concept of the predatoriness or the sex or, you know, any of it?
Okay, yeah, I have a couple of thoughts on this. First of all, I thought Kate was actually one of the strongest characters in the book as far as the writing and the characterization goes.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the author really, like, caught on to what she was all about and how she spoke and the way that she's so aware of herself as a woman and what she can make, you know, a guy do. And I thought that, like, it captured her essence perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool. I was glad to see one of the characters at least be that strong. Derek, I really did not enjoy Derek's past self when he was the 16-year-old kid.
Mm.
He reminded me a lot of Scott, and he was really whiny and really, like, you know, head over heels in love, which, hey, I mean, it's not a bad thing or anything, but it just kind of makes me wonder. I mean, it must be a werewolf thing that they just have a lot of testosterone in them or something, and that they're just, you know, so hyped up with all this energy and emotions and hormones and everything that maybe that's just how it is for them. But I like grumpy cat Derek, you know, I like him when he's a sour wolf, and I just didn't really enjoy seeing him this whiny and sort of not stoic and mysterious, and, you know, so that was kind of weird for me. What did you think about his characterization?
That's so mean, Karen. Don't you want him to be happy?
What? I mean, I do. I do want him to be happy, but he just, he came off very strange to me. It just seemed like...
No, I know. Yeah, I mean, I know. I think that, yeah, no, he was very kind of, he was sort of very naive and very one track in the sense of just... He didn't really seem to be, you know, interested in the world around him. You know, he wasn't like Laura. He wasn't trying to have friends or have a life or anything like that. He just wanted to be a good werewolf, and that was pretty much it until he saw Kate. And it was very... And I said this when we discussed, you know, what he might have been like before the fire, before, in an earlier episode, in that I think that he was probably even more innocent than... Scott. I don't think Scott would have ended up having an affair with a teacher and being that naive about it, because the tone, I think that if/when that does happen, I'm sure guys at, you know, that age of 16 or 17, a guy who was sort of smart and sassy would be fully as aware as the lady in the situation of how dodgy it could seem, or if he felt like more of an equal to her, regardless of age, which is what I originally thought. Like, when we watched the show originally, I knew that he was meant to be younger, but I figured that he was just a... I figured that he must have been really cocky for his age, if you know what I mean, and that's how they got together. And that this, he was so the opposite of that, that it was so predatory. Like, she was really, really, really predatory. And because he did not seem like an equal in any way, he was being led the whole way. And it's very disturbing, but it also, yeah, I can't imagine Derek being like that, and how much he must have hardened over the past 6 years to go from that, if that was his kind of personality, to what he is now. Because even if he ever gets happy again now, I don't think that he'll go back to being like, a dumb, naive boy. I think that he'll be a really kind of sarcastic and funny person, if you know what I mean. And yeah, he was really innocent. Yeah, much more innocent than I thought he would be based on when I originally watched the show. I thought that he'd be kind of an old for his age, cocky 17-year-old, where they were having what he thought was a somewhat equal relationship. I had also kind of assumed that he told her that he was a werewolf, and that's how she kind of tracked everything down. But in the canon of this, it was not that he ever revealed the secret to her. He let her into his life and she worked everything out. But he did not actually tell her the secret, and then she used that against him. She just, you know, she pulled him in because she already knew. But he didn't actually ever tell that he was a werewolf. And that kind of surprised me. That's not exactly what I'd thought had happened, but my brain doesn't make the law, so that's just as valid, I suppose, you know?
Yeah, I definitely thought the same thing as you, too. And it makes me wonder, I mean, this is kind of silly, because of course he's going to feel guilty, but it makes me wonder why he feels so guilty.
Yeah.
Because he didn't betray his family. I mean, he didn't do anything but go to her apartment and sleep with her. And, you know, I mean, obviously he should have been more careful, but to feel like he caused the fire and that, you know, it was all his fault was sort of a leap for me. And the whole thing in the actual book was a bit anticlimactic too, because I did expect him to want to show her, you know, who he was or whatever, feeling that he could trust her, and then that's when she used it against him.
Yeah.
So when that didn't happen, I sort of felt like the whole end of the story happened really fast between them literally like sleeping together and him thinking that everything's fine and, you know, she has the ring, and then to her saying, okay, the next morning I'm burning this house down and it's, you know, over with.
Yeah, it was very quick. Yeah, I was surprised at how, you know, I don't know how long they were meant to have been going together for, but month, a few weeks, whatever, like, but it was very much, it was a lot quicker than I had expected. It also mentioned that Kate didn't tell the rest of her family or team that she'd been sleeping with a werewolf for the job. So it makes me as well think about how crazy Kate was and how far she was willing to go and how many codes she broke in every single way, if you know what I mean, that she really was out of control in every aspect.
It's so strange to me because she seems like she wants to break the code about not killing kids and, you know, making sure that they've actually killed somebody before they kill that werewolf. You know, she breaks that code, so it makes me think that she hates werewolves with every fiber of her being, and yet here she is sleeping with one. And I don't have a problem with that as far as, like, it doesn't make logical sense. I think it just means that she's that crazy.
Oh, yeah, totally, yeah. It is somewhat insane. The other thing in regards to Derek and Kate is the weight of the imagery of the swimming pool. That's where they sort of met and courted and things like that. That will give potentially a real different feel to episode 204, the one where Derek and Stiles are stuck in that pool together for a really long time, if you recall that, and, like, Derek being stuck in that situation for hours. So, yeah, that small thing is, like, I'm sure I'll have that in mind when I'm watching Derek in that episode when we do the rewatch.
Yeah, me too.
That, you know, that's a little bit of added trauma for him there, which is always fun.
Did we talk yet about the whole he's mateable thing?
No.
Oh, okay. Did you want to do that next?
Yeah. In regards to the werewolf culture as well, again in these flashbacks, this author did choose to kind of touch down on something that I don't love in the concept of Teen Wolf and that I've mentioned before that I like about the show, that it doesn't go there, is that she had the wolves, like Laura and Derek, talking to each other about, you know, werewolf culture and all of that stuff. And Laura says to Derek at one point, you know, you're 16, in other words, mateable, like as in, like, I guess that means legal to have sex with. And later, you know, Derek is talking about wanting, you know, to take Kate as his mate and then a mate would bring him status. And whether or not this universe has things where people are, like, meant to be mates, like imprinting in Twilight, or even if it's just, you know, I'm choosing to you to be my mate in the same way that you might marry someone, I like that the show so far hasn't gone there with terminology. It can go there with actions, but I don't know if it's just because Scott, you know, the protagonist, is not a born werewolf and doesn't know all of these things. But I liked the fact that they don't use that animalistic terminology, even though they may have animalistic actions. I just don't like it. It's not like a squick thing. I just think it's a bit stupid. I just think it's a bit, you know, bad quality high fantasy kind of thing, if you know what I mean. You know, you don't see Oz in Buffy running around talking about having a mate, if you know what I mean. Like, I prefer the idea of the werewolves as people, and so I don't like that kind of divisive stuff. I like it when, you know, they might do things that are totally werewolf-y and animalistic, and that they speak about it really normally or even, like, derpily, if you know what I mean. Like, that they don't, that, you know, one of them might say something totally traditional or whatever, and that, you know, oh, is it like, you know, so-and-so traditional thing? And Derek would turn around and be like, this is not the 1800s, like, we are normal people kind of thing. And we haven't seen that, but we haven't seen the other end of it either, and I was hoping that they'd go one way and not the other in regards to the way that they speak about being werewolves or what werewolf behaviours are, and this book kind of went in the other direction a little.
It makes me wonder, I mean, obviously we know that they're people who turn into animals, not animals that turn into people, so they're definitely on, like, that end of the spectrum, but it makes me wonder, is it 50-50, or are they, you know, mostly human and a little bit werewolf? Because I think that would sort of explain how much the terminology is going to come into play. I don't mind, you know, the whole mate thing. I don't want it to be like, you know, imprinting with Twilight. It's like they have one mate and, you know, that's it. That's everything that they were destined to be together. You know what I mean? But I don't mind the fact that, like, okay, this is my mate. This is the person that I'm going to marry, sort of thing. As long as they don't stretch it too far, it doesn't really bother me all that much. What does kind of bother me is the fact that it's this whole, like, okay, so that they're mateable, quote unquote, at 16, which, you know, that's not a big deal, but I feel like they're using that, or at least in the story, as a way to sort of explain away the fact that Derek's so young and Kate's a little bit older, and that it's like, it's no big deal, he's mateable, and it's like, yeah, it is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of gross.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's not great, is it? As I said, it was much more predatory than I had expected from the dynamic in the show, and yeah, that doesn't really help the scenario.
So the main plot of the book was this robbery thing, this robbery plot that involved Jackson getting kidnapped and then Lydia and Danny and Damon, I believe his name was. So this whole thing, you know, was kind of strange to me, and it seemed a little not pointless because it was, well, it seemed like a plot device basically to get Scott out in the woods with Derek and with the Alpha. So to me, the whole plot here was kind of like just, you know, used as filler, which is fine because, you know, subplots and stuff are generally like that. But I did like the final scene here where Lydia was tied up, and I liked being inside Lydia's mind. I thought her whole breakdown.
I was going to say that as
everything.
Yeah, I was going to say that as well. The one of the bits that I really liked was the, like, it wasn't perfectly done, but the writing style when it was from Lydia's perspective and it had her kind of written out as like a flow chart and then written out as like,
yeah,
oh, okay, if I did this and then this and, like, you know, written like a list, a numbered list with, you know, conclusions. And that to me was really cool in the sense of getting inside Lydia's mind and knowing how analytically she thinks and how calculated she is about everything. I really liked that.
Yeah, so did I. I thought her in this whole scene was really cool with her seeing Danny up above and trying to figure out what they wanted and then going through, like you said, all these points and like, okay, what's the smartest thing to do? And her ability to read people and understand that these guys, you know, were going to do this certain thing, that they weren't dumb, that she couldn't just say, oh, I have to go to the bathroom to get out of it. And then Danny, I love Danny. He comes in with his lacrosse stick, the lacrosse ball, and just takes these guys out. And it was amazing. It was probably one of my favorite scenes in the book. And I just really loved how he sort of came to the rescue there.
And it also had her sort of Lydia's analysis of Danny as well. When she sort of sitting there, she saw Danny and Damon through the skylight, and she was sitting there and she kind of worked out that Danny was going to try something because she was analyzing who Danny was as a person, like that he was big guy, he was a lacrosse goalie, that, you know, 20 something people die every 100 years from taking a lacrosse ball to the chest, so he's very kind of big and brave, and that he was, you know, put the M in macho, I think. And again, that's, I think that ties into the aspect of Teen Wolf of the lack of stereotyping about gay guys as well. Like, I really thought that that was a bit of that. So that was cool as well, that we weren't making any kind of assumptions there, and that, you know, he's meant to be this sort of physically strong, brave hero that she knew was going to take them on, and that he was, you know, happens to be gay, and it was him and his boyfriend, and that very much ties into, I think, Teen Wolf's progressiveness. So that was cool.
Yeah. One of the parts that really stood out to me, too, was this one line from the book where it says, Scott and Styles had kind of raised each other. And to me, this was not super significant, but it really caught my eye. And it answered one of our questions from before, at least, you know, obviously, if we can count this as canon, for how long Scott had been in Beacon Hill. So, you know, apparently he wasn't a newcomer or anything like that. It also attests to their relationship and how close they really are, because if you think about it, you know, Styles doesn't have his mom. Scott doesn't have his dad. They're both the type of person that doesn't want to worry their parents and make their lives harder. So they sort of turned to each other and relied on each other. And I thought it was just a really sweet sentiment that in the book, you know, they said that Scott and Styles had raised each other.
Yeah, it definitely gave me that impression as well, of that it was a long-term thing. And I'm always keen to get more of that on the show because I've been a bit up and down about that dynamic. There are a few lines I really liked, most of them involving Styles, obviously. I think he wasn't perfect, and I've read better Styles in fan fiction, but there were some really good ones, especially there was the beginning of the book did have a few steric scenes. They had Derek ended up, you know, he was looking for Scott, couldn't find him, so went and lurked in Styles' room in the dark, and then they went on a bit of a mission together to try and find Scott. And there was one line that Styles, you know, was sitting there thinking about Derek and thinking of, you know, trying to interact with him and stuff. And he said, and it says, Styles had never realized there were so many degrees of the brood until Derek Hale had come into their lives. And I really liked that line. Out of all the lines in the book, I was laughing at that one quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. The funniest parts for me, and the parts where, besides Kate, because like I said, I thought she really stood out a lot.
Yeah.
The ones where the characters were the strongest were when Styles and Derek were together.
Yeah, that's true. It was very much like one of their capers that they have in the show when they're thrown together. And Derek's thoughts about how, you know, his threats had always worked before and weren't really working anymore in order to get Styles to do what he wanted. And Styles' kind of outright refusal to, even though he seemed to not like Derek, his outright refusal to give in to him or be intimidated by him or even treat him badly. Like, he kept, you know, joking with him, even if it's a joke at his expense. And at one point, he's like, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas, a phone, because the reason that he was following Styles around is because Derek didn't have his own phone. It's like, you don't say that to someone that you legitimately want to be dead and away from you, if you know what I mean. And I like,
yeah,
I like Styles's determination or inability to treat Derek as anything other than human, and or to treat him anything other than a person. Because we have a lot of divide here of, you know, oh, humans and werewolves. It's not like they're a mermaid. They're still a human. You know, it's not like they're a different being, in my opinion, because being right. a werewolf is something that happens to you. It's like having eczema or something, like, you know, a disease. You know, some people are born with a disease and some people develop a disease later in their life. You know, I have a chronic stomach disease. It doesn't mean I'm not a human, you know. And some people might be born with a disease. It doesn't mean they're not. Okay, I'm going to make a really nasty comparison. It's like AIDS. And actually, J.K. Rowling wrote a lot of the stuff to do with the way people treat Remus Lupin in the Harry Potter books. And it was meant to be representative of the way that people react to people with AIDS and HIV. But some people develop HIV later in their life. Some people happen to be born with HIV because their family had it. Doesn't mean make those people not also humans. And so I think werewolves are humans, in my opinion, if you know what I mean.
I kind of liken it to they're human, but they're not quite human. You know, like, you have humans, then you have, like, superhumans. It doesn't mean they're not human, but doesn't mean that they're not purely human, too. There's a little extra, you know, tagged on.
Yeah, of course, of course. You know, and there's this big divide in here of, like, oh, you're a human, you're a werewolf, or you're, or I'm a person, you're a monster kind of thing. And Styles, even though he knows what Derek is capable of, he kind of keeps on treating him like Derek is a person. Like, his threats mean nothing. Like, it would be the same way I was like, oh, Karen, write me this book or I'm going to bash your head in. I'm not really going to bash your head in, if you know what I mean. But that's kind of the way that Styles treats Derek, even if he is really scared, that his reaction to Derek is always like, he doesn't treat Derek like he's a threat. And I kind of always really like that.
Yeah, yeah, same here.
And then he accidentally pushes him over a cliff at the end, so that's great.
Yeah. One more point before we get into this sort of final question that we have hanging here is, what's just a quick thing that got me thinking a little bit.
Mm.
But in the book, we find out that Kate and Chris's parents got divorced while they were in high school. And this just sort of made me wonder where Allison's grandmother fits into any of this. You know, was the divorce because of the hunting or, you know, is because I don't believe we know anything about her grandmother at this point. I just sort of wonder, you know, is she still alive? If she's still alive, is she aware of all this?
Mm.
If she is, you know, is she for it? Is she against it? Sort of just kind of got me wondering because Gerard is not dead at this point at the end of season two. And his plot line could have nothing at all to do with, you know, her grandmother coming into it. But I thought it would be interesting to see a different side of the family because right now we have Chris, Kate, and Gerard, and they're all a little bit crazy. I mean, Chris is the most normal out of them, and I like his character a lot, but Gerard and Kate are absolutely nuts, and it makes me wonder what kind of person Gerard's wife was or is.
Yeah, potentially the grandmother was more of a kindred spirit with Chris, you know, because Kate's very much Gerard's daughter, it would appear, and she clearly took a lot from him and even took a lot from him and then went even further. And Gerard goes pretty far in his own way, so I don't know if the grandmother's meant to be dead or what happened, or even if this divorce is canon in the terms of Jeff's ideas. But yeah, I'm going to hope that the grandmother is less of a crazy person. And it would be really interesting to see her come in and maybe live with Allison and Chris and be a positive influence on Allison, you know, both teaching her and being a very kind of strong hunter veteran woman, but not crazy. Also, that whole idea also brings up, do you think that hunter families intermarry, like that Victoria came from another family of hunters, that, you know, if the werewolves can only marry werewolves, like how does a hunter become a hunter, if you know what I mean?
That's a really good question. Really, really good question. Off the top of my head, I would probably venture a yes, because how do you marry a person and then have to explain to them that you hunt werewolves? You know what I mean? Like, that would be a really big hurdle to get over. So, especially how vindictive Victoria was towards werewolves and everything, now that you bring it up, it does make me wonder that perhaps she already had a background in hunting and was affected somehow or something like that. But that's a really good question. I'd love to know the answer to that.
Yeah. So the last point that we had was in regards to, there's some imagery throughout the book of this wolf that is apparently a real wolf and not a werewolf. When Derek sort of smells its presence, he knows it's a real wolf. But Scott and Allison see it, Allison sees it again at the end of the book, and it kind of leads her out of things, and it's meant to be this sort of pale grey, wise looking, you know, silver wolf that they spot in the preserve, where apparently there's no natural wolves in California in the past 60 years. And this never comes up in the show, obviously. I mean, the lack of wolves comes up in the show. This wolf character doesn't come up in the show, but it seemed to be, again, something that seemed to be a really strong plot point that could have been done on purpose and could potentially be something to do with season three. Yeah, we don't know exactly what the situation is, but it really did seem like something that was not throwaway, and if it was throwaway, it was probably a bit of a bad choice, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, completely agree.
What do you think that it could be?
I have a couple of different theories for this. One of the ones that, I mean, I had kind of forgotten that Derek had scented it and knew that it was, you know, just a regular wolf or whatever. And so I was kind of thinking the whole time that it was a werewolf, because we knew that Laura could turn into an actual wolf.
Me too, yeah. But I didn't get that till the second time I flicked through the book today, because I thought, oh, maybe it's a kind elderly werewolf or something.
Yeah. But it also makes me wonder, like, would Derek necessarily know that? I mean, do you think that older wolves who are very much more experienced would have the ability to sort of mask their werewolfiness? That's a terrible word to use, but you guys know what I mean. You know, is there a way that it could still be a werewolf? Because for a while there, I was thinking it was part of the Alpha Pack, and maybe that this was sort of its early introduction, and we won't know until season three, like, how it ties in there. So that was just sort of one theory. The other one was that maybe it is just a regular wolf. And the thing that always tripped me up was that it was so helpful to Allison when she was trying to get out of the woods. But I was thinking that maybe it has something to do with scent, and that because she was with Scott, and Scott's a wolf of sorts, a werewolf, that maybe the wolf sort of recognized her as a pack member or as having a relationship with this other wolf, and, you know, it was just sort of doing its pack duty to help her on her way. So that's another possibility. I think a little less likely, but, you know, it would make sense. And then you had put down in here, you know, could it be a spirit animal or something? And
yeah, like, so a werewolf god, or, like, I don't know, like,
yeah,
Patronus,
which,
you
would
know,
be
like,
really, yes. But it would be really interesting, I think, if it was something else. I hadn't thought of, like, some sort of deity or something like that. That would be really cool. I love Native American lore. I love all sorts of mythology. And I think it would be really neat if maybe they brought more of that into here. I don't know how strong of a presence Native Americans had in, you know, that particular region, or, you know, which tribes were there or anything like that. But it would be really neat, I think, to bring in this older generation of werewolves and, you know, maybe with the gods or something like that. That would be really
cool. Yeah. And I mean, my other thought when you were saying it could be, you know, a werewolf that was older and more experienced, maybe there are werewolves out there that people out there, or alphas, who were so either not coping with human culture or just so into being a werewolf that they became a werewolf fully, if you know what I mean. Like, they lived all of the time as a wolf, and that they got absorbed into that. And maybe, you know, I'm sure they still have their own mind and they could morph back if they wanted to, but that Derek might not have recognized it because it was a person who was now, you know, 90% living as a wolf or something like that.
I also just wanted to mention, too, that this book came out July of 2012, which was right around episode 204. And it made me look at the book a little bit differently, having not read it when it first came out, but after season two was over. You know, there was at least one hint in there of Jackson possibly being the Kanema, because when they were in the counselor's office, the counselor said something like, you know, these sorts of things, talking about his past and all that, have a way of manifesting themselves. And I was like, oh, hello, red flag, you know. So, and I mean, obviously, if you were reading it way early on, that wouldn't necessarily give it away, but it was definitely, I think, a clue of sorts.
That's true.
And so it just made me try to find other things in the book that would possibly give us clues to season three. I didn't come up with anything else other than, you know, maybe the wolf is significant, but did you catch anything like that that could help us maybe figure out what's going to happen in season three?
Honestly, no, I don't, I have no idea. I would think that it would be like, yeah, the wolf was the main thing. Laura's, you know, Laura and Derek's backstory, and yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I can't really, I couldn't place anything. But again, usually these tie-in novels for a show are a bit more self-contained and don't, you know, they exist in a sense where it could be a story that happened and it doesn't really affect the rest of the show. But this had too many things that seemed to bleed in that I really don't know what we could be looking out for. Perhaps we'll have to look back once season three's come out and see if they were feeding us anything via this book.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that's about all we have to say for the book for now. If you've read it, let us know if you had any extra thoughts on it or if we completely missed the point or something like that. You know, otherwise, you give it a go if you are interested in seeing what it's all about. But yeah, we will be back to do the recap of 109 and 110 in about a week's time from now. And then after that, you know, we've got the season finale of season one of Teen Wolf, Christmas and all of that kind of things, you know. But we will try and work out when we will do another bite-sized episode. Let us know what one you'd like to hear first. If you want to hear about the movie, if you want to hear about the webisodes. I've got a feeling it might be the webisodes because I rewatched them last night and I actually accidentally started crying in one of them. So we might be we might be going there. But fan fiction and shipping, I'd say wait till season two because there's a lot more characters that come into play in season two, obviously. But if you've got any ideas, let us know what you thought about this concept. All right, so until then, yeah, contact us and, you know, let us know what you thought, and we'll see you in about a week's time. So, bye.
Bye. I just thought that was kind of funny, you know, that their claws, their, wow.